Good morning, everyone. So I think last week you had a look at the first part of Book 5, Canto 3, Satyavan and Savitri. Yeah? Anybody has any pending questions about that? So let's go on. Page 402, line 76. Yeah. Manohar, you'll start.
Yes. Close is my father's Sripad hermitage, screened by the tall ranks of these silent kings, sung too by voices of the Hurons choirs, whose chants repeat transcribed in music notes, the passionate colored lettering of the boughs, and fill the hours with their melodious cry. Amid the welcome hum of many bees, invade our honeyed kingdom of the woods. There let me lead thee unto an opulent light. Bare, simple is the sylvan hermit life, yet it is clad with the jewelry of earth. Wild winds run, visitors meet the swaying tops, through the calm days, heaven's sentinels of peace, couched on a purple robe of sky above, look down on a rich secrecy and hush, and the chambered nuptial waters chant within. Enormous, whispering, many-formed around, high forest gods have taken in their arms the human Hava, a guest of their sanctuary pomps. Apparelled are the morns in gold and green, sunlight and shadow tapestry the walls to make a resting chamber fit for thee.
Thank you. So this is a lovely poetic way of inviting Savitri to step down from her chariot and come into the woods. Anything to ask? Or share? Sylvan has to do with the woods. So in the line previously he said, let me lead you into an opulent life, a rich, luxuried life. No? But then in this line he says, well, after all, the hermit life, the life of human beings living in the woods, is bare and simple, but it is made opulent, it's made rich by the jewelry of earth, all the wonderful colors and beautiful aspects of the earth. Yes, this is the sound of the streams. There are other places where he speaks about somehow the marriage, the meeting of land and water, as if this is a love affair, no? And that the stream embraces the banks as they sink down into it. So this is a kind of comparison of this meeting of Satyavan and Savitri. Nuptial has to do with marriage.
Can I ask something about the formal page?
Yeah.
I remember last time there was further discussion about the temple's wizard song.
Well, we know that the centaurs are these ancient Greek mythological creatures who have the body of a horse and then the body of a man above. And these are creatures of the forest and the wild spaces. And there are many different stories about the relationships or the contacts between centaurs and human beings. But the one that occurs to me in connection here and somewhere else where Sri Aurobindo refers to the music of the centaurs is that at least one of them was a famous musician. He was Chiron, the guru of the Argonauts. The story of the Argonauts is of the young princes who set off to find the golden fleece, which of course is a very symbolic thing. Medananda casts some light on this story, that there were tribes along the shores of the Black Sea who put sheepskins into the river to catch small particles of gold that were swept down by the water. So that was a kind of emblem of the wealth of their kingdom. And these young Greek princes who were students of Chiron, the centaur, somewhere down in the Peloponnese, they set off to find it. And when they were leaving, first of all, they built their ship, the Argo, under his supervision. And he gave them a branch of a tree from the special oak tree, sacred to the goddess Hera, the wife of Zeus, so the Shakti of Zeus, we can say. And as they set off rowing, set off on their journey, they had a sail also, he stood on the headland and sang mantras and blessings and everything to speed them on their way. So I don't know whether that's the illusion here, but maybe some of those centaurs had lyres and made special magical music. Somebody who's interested in Greek mythology can do some research to find out in more detail. So he brings together there the centaurs from Greek mythology and the apsaras from Indian mythology. So these are the powers of the subtle worlds. That's what he's saying. I've seen them. I've heard them. So maybe you also are one of them. But I hope not, he says. And if you are earthly being, then please take rest here. And he makes it sound like a palace. Above there's this purple robe of sky, and the beings are looking down on this these enclosed rooms where the waters are running, and the forest gods are protecting this place, welcoming the few human beings. And it's all so beautiful. The mornings are dressed, decorated in gold and green. They make like tapestries on the walls of a palace. And this will be a very suitable resting place for you, princess. Yes, these forest gods, he says, are many-formed. So he means the trees, or the trees, their spirits, the spirits inhabiting the trees. And they spread their arms, their branches, and he says they have welcomed, they have taken, they've embraced human time, which is a different kind of time from forest time. They've welcomed these few human beings who live here. And they've welcomed them as guests. In their centuried pomp, some of those trees are very, very old, and they've grown wonderful forms and foliage. But they are welcoming these small, brief-lived human beings. Shall we go on? Maggie, would you like to read?
A while she paused, as if hearing still his voice, unwilling to break the charm. Then slowly spoke. Musing, she answered, "I am Savitri, princess of Madra. Who are thou? What name musical on earth expresses thee to men? What track of kings watered by fortunate streams has flowered at last upon one happy branch? Why is thy dwelling in the pathless wood, far from the deeds thy glorious yoke demands? How of the anchorites and earth's wilder broods, where only with this witness serves who roamst in nature green inhuman loneliness, surrounded by enormous silences and the blind murmur of primeval calms."
Yes.
And?
No, thank you. Yes. So Satyavan was wondering who she is, and she tells him that I'm Savitri, the princess of Madra. And then she recognizes that there's something princely about him. She says, who are you? And then there's this sentence, what name musical, what musical name expresses thee to men on earth? What is the label that human beings know you by? She says you must have a musical name to match your appearance. And she asks about his family. She makes a reference to the family tree. What trunk, the main stem of the tree. These must all your ancestors and relatives must be kings, no? And your family has been blessed by fortunate streams. It's been able to grow tall and strong. And now, at last, you are the flower of this tree. One happy branch, one special branch of this tree. So she recognizes that he's a prince and she compliments him. But at the same time she asks him, but what are you doing here in the forest? No, far away, princes usually are found in other contexts where they can show their prowess, their strength and so on. So here you seem to be living in the forest where the hermits live, the anchorites, and the animals, earth's wilder brutes. And you're roaming here all alone in this unhuman loneliness. Not inhuman, which means cruel, yes, but unhuman, yeah. You're surrounded by these enormous silences and the blind murmur of primeval calms. When we go into the deep virgin forest, there's a sense of touching the undisturbed nature that's been on the earth for millennia. For millions of years.
Without
any human interference.
Anchorites
are hermits, people who've left the world to live afar from other human beings for spiritual progress.
So where is the home?
No, the forest is the haunt of the anchorites. It's where we usually expect to find hermits, not princes. Why is their dwelling in the pathless wood? No, that's the haunt of the anchorites.
It's interesting for me, where only with thy witness self. That is interesting, that she recognized that he's living.
Yeah, he has told her something like that, no, that I have seen all these things. So she recognizes this nobility in him. So now he's going to tell the story, Patty.
And Satyavan replied to Savitri, in days when yet his sight looked clear on life, King Dumatsena, once the Shalva reigned, through all the tract which from behind these tops, passing its days of emerald delight, in trusting converse with the traveler winds, turns looking back towards the southern heavens, and leans its flank upon the musing hills. But equal fate removed her covering hand. A living night enclosed the strong man's path. Heaven's brilliant gods recalled their careless gifts, took from blank eyes their glad and helping ray, and led the uncertain goddess from his side. Outcast from empire of the outer light, lost to the comradeship of seeing men, he sojourns in two solitudes, within and in the solemn rustle of the woods. Son of that king, I, Satyavan, have lived contented, for not yet of thee aware. In my high people loneliness of spirit, and this huge vital murmur kin to me, nursed by the vastness, pupil of solitude.
Thank you. Yeah, fate is supposed to be equal to everybody. No, she doesn't favor anybody. So she is supposed to protect the king, but she's removed her protecting, and so he has fallen blind. What's interesting is that Sri Aurobindo tells us exactly where this kingdom of Shalva is, you know, relative to where they are. She's been following this road and come to this valley and these hills, and there she met Satyavan. And now he's describing that his father was the king of Shalva, and that Shalva is on the other side of these hills, and it's the land which looks southward, south of the hills. He mentions it again at the very end of the poem when they leave the place, that in order to get to Shalva they have to turn west, and then they'll go around, I suppose. It's somewhere in the western Terai.
It's in this dictionary.
What? Shalva. It tells you.
Yeah.
There's a map.
There's no map.
I have seen a map where both Madra and Shalva were shown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Madra's more up in towards the Hindu Kush. And this is Western Terai, western part of the borderland between India and Nepal nowadays.
It's possibly Rajasthan.
There it says possibly Rajasthan. Well, I don't know who's told him that.
Western India.
Western India.
But in Rajasthan they don't have these hills. Here this is all... Yes, but this is the foothills of the Himalayas that he's describing here. It's very clear.
And the Shalva stems from a root verb meaning to shine.
Okay.
And it's the home of this king and his son.
Yeah, yes.
I was just asking myself in that previous passage about this blind murmur of primeval calms, and then I'm seeing the blindness of Dhyumatsena. I was thinking it's symbolic. Mm. Maybe he had to enter that silence, that primeval calm, by falling blind. He had to reflect more in it.
Well, that's what Death tells to Savitri later on. He says, okay, I will give him back his sight, but it would be better if I left him blind, because in that way he can gain a deeper knowledge and a deeper wisdom.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's a symbol of the Western world.
India. So this is the traditional story. No? The king falls blind, so he's not fit to rule anymore, and he's exiled. There's perhaps a coup, a palace coup, or something like that. In the author's note, Sri Aurobindo says that this is symbolic, that Dyumatsena, the king's name, it means the Lord of the Shining Hosts or Shining Armies. And he says this is the Shining Armies are the armies of the mind, the divine mind. That is what Dyumatsena represents. And here in our human world, he too is in the grip of ignorance and death. The divine mind has fallen blind, and because it's lost its power of vision, it's lost its mastery, its power to rule. So what this is part of Savitri's mission is not only to, first of all, to release the soul, no, to liberate the soul of man, but in doing that she's able to restore the mind, the human mind, to its full power of vision and mastery. These boons which come in the story, they all have a symbolic significance of one kind or another.
But equal fate is a little curious, because obviously everybody's destiny is unique. Where is the concept of an equal fate?
Don't know, you'll have to think about it.
And covering as a sense of...
I think that's a kind of
blessing.
A protecting hand, and she removes that. So then that that king loses his power of vision.
It means it doesn't make differences.
Yeah, I think that's what it means. It's somehow impartial, so it doesn't protect some people more than others. And it may be that if there's a feeling that somebody is too protected, then it might be some kind of balance has to be kept, something like that, maybe. Yes, Tuan?
Satyavan starts, in days when yet his sight looked clear or light, King Bhatshara, he was a king that fate had destined him to be a king. Equal fate, always fate, destined him to be blind, or becoming blind.
To compensate for being a king.
No, it's simply fate.
It's simply fate, equally.
It's impartial.
Yes.
You can be a king because it's fate to be a king.
Yes.
Like it's, although you're king, equal fate gives you.
Yes. Something like that. Yeah.
But that root meaning shining applies to Dyumatsena, not the word shalwa. You said something about the Don said something
Don?
About the root.
What?
You said the root of the word shalwa means shining.
Bright and shining, very powerful.
So maybe even.
I didn't find that in the dictionary, that's why I wondered if in your copy it
is. It's in my copy of the dictionary, I don't know what it says. It says a shalwa stems from a root verb meaning to shine.
I see, that's a new addition.
So that's interesting, isn't it? That the country that he rules over.
The king and his son.
Yeah.
That's shining army.
Yes, but that it's even there in the name of the country, it's interesting.
Because
yeah.
Dyumatsena doesn't mean a Dyuman by that same root, no?
Yes, that means full of light, no?
Oh, I'm sorry.
And Sena, Sena means an army.
An army of light.
May I ask something? I can't imagine or place, in particular, it's line, for those who want to read, 122, heaven's brilliant gods, called there, and then in particular, careless gifts.
Yeah.
If they're careless, I can't place.
So they think, oh, we've made a mistake here. We gave him sight, but now we better take it back again. Yeah. Maybe. Something like that. Perhaps the gifts of heaven are always a bit casual and might be taken away at any moment.
Why me, not you?
And there he says the uncertain goddess. That's also fate. We can't rely on fate. No, she may appear to be very favorable, but then she changes. So he's
Excuse me, I was just thinking that maybe equal fate means the days when he had equanimity, because earlier it said days of emerald delight. So he had a delightful life before he fell blind, no? I think that's a suggestion.
So whatever it is, he's been cast out from the empire, the rule of the outer light, the physical light, and he's lost to the comradeship of seeing men. He's been exiled from ordinary human society. So he's living here in the woods. He's dwelling within himself, alone, companionless within himself. And he's alone here, physically, in the woods. And he says, I'm the son of that king, and I've been happy here. I have lived here contented. And I was contented because I didn't know anything about you. I've lived here in this loneliness of spirit. And he explained how that for him that solitude was filled with these high and noble presences, and then this murmur of life. The forest is full of the murmur of life, and he feels that very close to him. And I've been nursed by this vastness. I'm the student of this solitude. And that's what he's going to elaborate on next, all the wonderful lessons that he has learned from nature, living in the forest.
What of high people?
Yes, I think it's what he spoke about, these different presences. You read it last week, no? So these are great noble beings that he has seen in his loneliness. It wasn't like a desolate desert place. It was full of rich experience and encounters. Mila.
Great nature came to her recovered child. I read in a kingdom of another nobler kind that men can build upon God mother's soil. I met the frankness of the primal earth. I enjoyed the intimacy of infant God. In the great tapestry chambers of her state, free in her boundless palace, I have dwelt, indulged by the warm mother of all's arms, reared with my natural brothers in her house. I lay in the white bare embrace of heaven. The sunlight's radiant blessing clasped my brow. The moonbeam's silver ecstasy at night kissed my dim lids to sleep. Earth's morns were mine, lured by faint murmurings with the green rock hours. I wandered lost in woods, prone to the voice of winds and waters, partner of the sun's joy, a listener to the universal speech. my spirit satisfied within me, new godlike our birthright, luxury our life, whose close belongings are the earth and sky.
Thank you. Well, this is something that we have lost by becoming civilized, this communion with nature. It says, great nature came to her recovered child. He had been born in a palace and was brought up in a palace. But now he came, in his youth, he came back to her. And he says this seemed to him a nobler kind of kingdom than any that men can build on dull matter soil. I met the frankness of the primal earth. No pretense. No, it's a beautiful word about sincerity, openness. Simplicity. Yes, Don.
Some time ago I saw a movie by an anthropologist of the tribe in the Amazon jungle who had never ever touched any kind of humanity and how they lived. And yet we're reading this and he's telling all the wonderful things that nature has given him. So obviously he, Satyavan, has brought with him
something, yeah.
Something, and then he is, in a sense, he's making a comparison, which these natives couldn't do, because they were just, that was home.
They are enjoying that. But because he was brought up in a palace and a royal family, he's able to be grateful, to appreciate and to be grateful. And as he continues further with his story, we see that even in his boyhood in the palace, he already had developed some great sensitivity to beauty. Amal Kiran says that here Sri Aurobindo describes the soul of a poet. You know? But he mentions also that, and I think that comes in the legend, that he was an artist.
Birth and with education all, and then to spend the time really in with nature and appreciate it and have this inner experience.
If possible, yes.
So this infant growth, the
first growth, family growth? Yeah, I think it means God before he's developed all the later capacities of evolution, infant God, God, as a child playing freely in the primal paradisal state. He enjoys that.
Shadavan, for some reason, this line, great nature came to her recovered child,
mm-hmm.
I have circled this line, and I have written the dates every time we passed through.
And that's that line.
It was
what was
time,
the last time?
Well, the first time was 12th of September 2010. 10 September 10. Then December, it's 5th December of 2013.
So that must have been in the other class.
Is that right?
I think so. I think 2010 perhaps was in this class.
I was curious about that. And today, I don't know the date, but it's March.
Today is the 22nd of March.
First day of spring, my dear.
So it's only in like 4.5 years.
I think 4.5 years is a full cycle. That's why I'm saying that the second date in 2013, it must have been in the other class. So he sums it up in these three lines, no? My spirit, satisfied within me, knew God-like our birthright, luxuried our life, whose close belongings are the earth and skies. And then he speaks about his life before he came to the palace.
This is my spirit satisfied within me. Yesterday I was with Tanga to the concert and then saw the picture there from the first development in Auroville there. No? And then you see the picture, how they happy they had been working there with such a basic things. And then the one said, Auroville said to me, and now they're complaining this and this and this. So that is this that his spirit was, you know, it is a luxury in the simplicity he's living.
Yes.
Skies is a plural.
Yes. Skies, plural, because the sky is changing all the time. Different kinds of skies. We'll read on. Norman, will you read?
Before fate led me into this emerald world, aroused by some foreshadowing touch within, an early presence.
Prescience.
In my mind approached the dumb animal, the great dumb animal, consciousness of earth, now grown so close to me, who have left old pomps to live in this grandiose murmur, dim and vast. Already I met her in my spirit's dream, as if to a deeper country of the soul, transposing the vivid imagery of earth through an inner seeing and sense, awakening came. A vision spell pursued my boyhood's hours. All things the eye had caught in colored lines were seen anew through the interpreting mind and in the shape it sought to seize the soul. An early child god took my hand that held, moved, guided by the seeking of his touch, bright forms and hues which fled across his sight, limned upon page and stone, they spoke to me. high beauties, visitants, my intimates were. The name pride of rapid life that roams wind-maned through our pastures, on my seeing mood cast shapes of swiftness, trooping spotted deer against the vesper sky became a song of evening to the silence of my soul.
Thank you. Well, this is the way the artist sees and experiences things. No? He's stimulated by the forms of nature. It's as if they get transposed into a deeper country of the soul. Transposing is something that musicians do. A piece of music might be written for a particular instrument, for a cello. But if the violinist wants to play it, then he has to transpose it so that it's transpose is the word, Don. Yeah, transposing. Transcribing we also do. We do transcribing of Devanagari, Sanskrit alphabet, into the Latin alphabet so that we can read it and know how to pronounce it. But it's transposing is when you change it from one key, one particular key, to another one. So there's the physical world, but in the eye and experience of the artist, this outer world may get transposed into a deeper country of the soul.
In line 160,
yes.
Already I met her in my spirit's dream.
Nature. Or the great faith. Dumb animal consciousness of earth.
Oh, you don't think it means fate?
No.
Fate is personified.
No.
I was thinking earlier, he said, I am not aware of you, Savitri, but up here on 141, he says, he refers to the warm mother of us all.
Yeah, that's so Mother Nature.
Mother Nature.
Yes.
The divine mother and her emanations, he's not aware
this
of.
This great nature that he mentions in line 134, she came to her recovered child. He's speaking about being welcomed by nature. And that he feels like a child of nature. He's kin to all these natural forms. But there's also something else about him, which even while he was living in the palace, he was seeing this great dumb animal consciousness of earth. It somehow, an early prescience of foreknowledge in his mind made him close to all these manifestations of nature that have now grown so close to him I've left all that palace life. But already then I met her, I met Earth or Mother Nature in my spirit's dream. And
he refers to soul and spirit,
yes,
several times, but one has the feeling he has had no spiritual instruction from any guru. There's no sense of
that. Well, let's read on.
Yeah, I don't think.
Talking about the painting illustrations and so on, there's a new word which I just learned, which seems to me that limb.
What? To limb, to outline or to draw. So he did that. No, he now I've lost the line.
171 is where I'm
limbed, yes. So he's seeing those forms and interpreting them, and then he draws them. He draws them on a page. He's a painter and he's a sculptor. Later on it's told about how he's made a statue of Durga that's worshipped there in the hermitage. No? Durga, the goddess Durga.
Here for limb, it says to depict or portray through the illumination of painting. So there were paintings which were called illuminations, I think, but...
Yes. Limb literally means first to outline, and then you can fill it in with the illumination.
Illumination here would just mean the use of color?
Of gold. Gold and colors.
Oh, gold.
There are these illuminated manuscripts.
Oh, yeah.
They're written in black on the white page or in gold on the purple page sometimes.
Oh.
But then when there's a picture, a wonderful decorative picture for a particular letter, ornamentation. So he feels guided. An early child god took my hand and I held on to him. And
the God is like the sense of him inside?
I think so. Often young children have this feeling of having a companion, no, who guides them and shares their pleasures and delights. So, and he says he was guided by that child god to see these forms, and I drew them on the page and on the stone. And he starts to give examples of some of the things that particularly moved him. One, the horses. All those old kings, they kept herds of horses. So this neighing pride of rapid life that roams wind-maned through our pastures. That's not now, that's when he was living in the palace. No, his father had all these herds of horses. And there would be a deer park for hunting. No, these trooping spotted deer, he sees them silhouetted against the evening sky, the vesper sky. Evening. Vespers are the evening ceremonies and prayers. Yes. Actually, perhaps it means west. It's a Latin word.
Pertaining to the evening, it
says evening here.
Yeah.
And then in the Catholic Church, aren't the vespers done in the evening?
Yes. Matins in the morning, vespers in the evening. So that picture became a song for him. When Sri Aurobindo was still at university, he became acquainted with the symbolist poets, the French symbolist poets, who are credited with inventing this this way of transposing one kind of what you experience with one kind of sense to what you experience with another kind of sense. So we got an example of that on page 402 about the voices of the birds, the hue-robed choirs, the birds in their lovely coloured plumage, yes, and their songs repeat, transcribed, here it's transcribed, not transposed, transcribed, written in another language, in the language of music, no? The passionate coloured lettering of the boughs. So what is there in the form of flowers and leaves gets expressed in a different way in the song of the birds. No?
Also, Vesper in the Catholic ritual is the evening shouts.
Yes, yeah.
So the song, the
song of evening.
It becomes a song and it's like in the church.
Yes.
Things of Sicilian Vespers, for instance.
Yes.
And transcribed the original instrument by whatever composer, taken by a performer and transferred, let's say, from piano to guitar.
Yes, yes. So in the same way. So they did it with, they spoke about a violet perfume, for instance. They had imagery like that, which quite enriches the possibilities of the poet for suggestion and richness. And Sri Aurobindo uses it sometimes. So here it's the shapes, the forms of the deer, as seen against the sky, becomes to him like a song of evening. He experiences it as a kind of music. So then this famous image, which Amal Kiran has written about at great length, who will read? Amitoj.
I caught for some eternal eye the sudden kingfisher flashing to a darkling pool, a slow swan silvering the azure lake, a shape of magic whiteness sailed through dream, leaves trembling with the passion of the wind, branched butterflies, the conscious flowers of air, and wandering wings in blue infinity lift on the tablets of my inner sight. Mountains and trees stood there like thoughts from God. A brilliant long bill, the brilliant long bill in their vivid dress, the peacock scattering on the breeze his wound, painted my memory like a frescoed wall. I carved my vision out of wood and stone. I caught the echoes of a word supreme and metered the rhythm beats of infinity and listened through music for the eternal voice.
Thank you. So he was an artist. Franked butterflies, the conscious flowers of air. Beautiful, no? Franked means decorated, dressed up.
Not a nasty trick.
No, not a nasty trick. So all these things lived, he kept them in his memory on the tablets of my inner sight.
The first line, I called for some eternal eye. What does this mean? That he was an artist and painted this eternal eye, for some eternal eye.
Yes, as I say, Amal Kiran has written at great length on this. And he says this is actually what the artist does. His physical eye and his human perception at a particular moment of time can catch something for the eternal eye, the divine consciousness, no? And that's held there. And if there's some kind of sense of that for the artist, then what he wants to do is to perpetuate that experience in a form here in the material world. And by doing that, by making a work of art as accurately as he can, he helps the reality of that eternal seeing to become more concrete for other human beings. That's the thrill of art.
Is described, as you know. It starts with a visioned spell.
Yes, yeah, yes.
Could we again read those in connection with what you just said?
A visioned spell. This is line 164. Mm-hmm. He's describing the relationship of, you know, his childhood consciousness with nature, with earth. No? And so it says, if this visioned spell, a magic kind of seeing, pursued my boyhood's hours. So all the things which the eye saw in colored lines, we just look out, we see this or that. Were seen anew through the interpreting mind. The mind sees the form of the flower, but it interprets it. And through the interpreting mind, it's trying to seize, you know, the soul. Yeah, and sometimes perhaps it succeeds.
Reading these passages, for me, it continuously comes to mind. A farmer passage, I don't recall exactly at which point. And he's speaking of an unwritten Vedic book,
yes,
nature. And this famous aphorism, which I love a lot, because I studied history of art. Art represents what nature hides.
Nature reveals what nature.
What nature. And these things, I think, when you keep those in mind, all these things become slowly
meaningful.
Clear, at least to me,
yes.
A lot to interpret these lines.
Yeah, the way I have formulated it for myself. Human beings feel separate from nature.
Mm.
No? We feel that what we do is somehow distorting what is natural. It's artificial, it's mechanical, it's mental. Mm? But we do have the faculty somehow to put ourselves at the service of an eternal eye and channel some creative, some eternal creative force, and then what comes out is art. Animals, well, of course they do, actually, elephants, some elephants paint and so on, but this seems to be something particularly that human beings can do. Not so much through the mind, more through some direct perception. And this is discussed or illustrated in Book 2, Canto 2, The Kingdom of the Subtle Matter. I think it comes there where Shobindo says that these more perfect and more beautiful forms exist in the subtle worlds, and what we call a genius, a great artist or a poet or musician, they seize something from there. And the more purely they transmit it, the greater is that art. They can't help putting something of their individual stamp on it. Maybe they're even supposed to do that, to contribute their individual stamp. But when it is least modified, then it is most divine. So this is the mystery of art and the great value of art, which is not only aesthetic. We appreciate art, we have a possibility of a sense of beauty which can enjoy, but it's not only that. It's by being concretized into a lasting physical form, those subtle beauties are brought nearer to manifestation in the material world. And I think this is the great significance that the mother gave to art of all kinds, that this possibility of bringing higher realities closer to a concrete realization here, which unfortunately many modern artists seem to have lost. No, instead they bring things from the subtle worlds, but they choose some of the uglier things to bring. I think I would like to pause there because a new movement starts, and we can look at that next week. A new movement in the poem starts now in what Satyavan is saying. Instead of just reading a few lines of it, I think prefer to keep that for next week. But we can also see that in the sentence that runs from line 191, he speaks about poetry. I caught the echoes of a word supreme and metered the rhythm beats of infinity and listened through music. So this is about poetry and music for the eternal voice. The way that poetry and music have the capacity to put us in touch with deeper levels of ourselves. Yes. How many passages do we have for Canto 3?
Quite a lot.
5-3-1. Maybe we just listen to 4.
To 4.
No, that's number 2. That's number 2. Let's start with number 1 and do 4. Yes. 5-3-1, you start with that.
Solemn moral of the world. son of that king, I, Satyavan, have lived content, for not yet to be aware in my high people loneliness of spirit.
Thanks to Shravindu.
Thank you for your time this morning.
I have a belt, but that only makes it worse. Anyway, today it was okay. So I hope I can come on Wednesday. Norman, you're about to go.
I'm about to go, yes. I'm going on Saturday.
On Saturday?
Yes, but I'm doing reading again because
yes,
it went very well, so everybody wants me to do it again.
Yes.
So I'm doing it on Wednesday.
Lots of
it was very well. I was really pleased with it from the response. I felt it was always good, a good script, but the response was really quite pleasing. So I said, okay, I'll do it Wednesday.
Yes. So we won't meet. Well,
no, I should be away on Saturday evening. Yeah. All right.
So all the best to you.
Yes.
Safe traveling.
And I'll see you when I come back. Yes. I've no idea because I've got to go and I'm having a scan. I'm going back because I have to have my final scan.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully that'll be alright. And I think that will be alright. But I've got a gallbladder problem, so I may have to have an operation. So I'm sort of waiting to see what happens then and have it and get it over with because I've tried other things and it's not worked. So now I think I maybe have the operation.
Okay, so all the best, Norman.
Yeah, alright. I'll see you as soon as I get back.
Norman, I'm
No, no, he won't come here on Wednesday. He's
performing
the
reading on Wednesday.
Oh, you're doing this.
I'm doing my reading again.
But everybody's talking about it.
Well, it's only with So they said, please come and do it again. So I'm only the only chance I get is Wednesday. So I'm doing it on Wednesday evening. So,
and you leave on Saturday?
And I leave on Saturday.
And when you are going from there?
Well, I'm just saying I have to have
not
an operation. So whether that's going to delay me a bit. So I don't know how long that will.
Is it sure you have to have that operation?
Well, I'm hoping, I've tried it.
Yeah.
And
oh, nice to have Maggie's forgotten. Maggie's
scan for my cancer. Now and another scan for my gallbladder. So hopefully the one in the gallbladder is better. I think if they say no, then I have to have it.
Okay.
Oh yeah, no, I'll be back soon. It's very difficult to say exactly when. Yeah.
But you keep in touch.
Yes, of course. Okay. Okay, see you again, yes, when I come back.
So next time we have a small
nice how everywhere the circles become more close with our variance, no? Yeah, do regularly the work.
I hope something is developing in the collective consciousness.
Yes, I know so too.
You have to stop the recording,
right? You shall put this?
Yeah. Just a little.